I'm Corey Constable, and this is Omitted. I am as I am, and so will I be. But how that I am, none knoweth truly. Be it evil, be it well, be I bond, be I free. I am as I am, and so will I be. May 19th, 1536 was the hardest day of Sir Thomas Wyatt's entire life. He was born in 1503 at Allington Castle to Henry and Anne Wyatt, and he spent his early years as any young boy born in a castle would, traipsing about its halls, running back and forth down the newly constructed long gallery, climbing its stone towers that looked over the River Medway, lounging beneath the shade of the elm tree in the courtyard, writing poems that he would never send to a girl he'd once met. When he was just a child, still too young to know the greatness he was destined for, too young to know the heartache and grief that he would someday feel, his father sent him off to the newly formed St. John's College in Cambridge to begin his studies. And he took to them so easily. He reveled in his scholarly pursuits. Arithmetic, literature, history. He took to them all so well, so kindly that when he left school at the age of 13, he refused to let his studies go. His father had positioned himself well in the court, though, and Thomas would reap the rewards. As the Tudors began their reign over England, his father, Henry, helped prop them up. He went on special missions to Scotland for King Henry VII, served as a guard for King Henry VIII. So when the opportunity arose for 13-year-old Thomas to assume the position of sewer extraordinary, essentially just a very fancy name for a dinner servant, he was brought down from Allington to London, where he began his royal service. He was following in his father's footsteps, setting himself up nicely for a life of luxury and servitude to the crown. And gradually, he began to work his way up the ranks. Knowing the counsel that his father had given to the crown, Henry VIII brought Thomas on as a trusted advisor, told him the sordid details that no one else could hear, about the unhappiness in his marriage to Catherine of Aragon, about his frustrations that she couldn't seem to bear him a male heir. He told Thomas of the mistress he'd taken on, a lady-in-waiting named Mary, and how his thoughts had been, for some time, on Mary's sister, Anne Boleyn. But Thomas kept quiet in his station as advisor. He held his tongue in front of the most powerful man in the world because for the last 3 years, he too had been thinking only of Anne. The first time he saw her, in 1522, he knew he'd fallen in love. This girl, from nobility, with dark brown hair and even darker brown eyes, who carried herself with an air of elegance and grace, whose conversations were filled with wit and with passion. She took Thomas's love for the written word and expanded upon it. She showed him that the fortune her father had spent on her schooling in France and Austria, that the years she'd spent studying art and history and literature had all been valued and appreciated, just as Thomas had valued and appreciated his own. In some ways, he felt, this woman was an equal. In mind and in spirit, she reflected the qualities that Thomas felt set him above the rest. But he was married already. 2 years prior, he'd married a woman named Elizabeth Brooke. And together, in 1521, the couple had a child named Thomas the Younger. The elder Thomas was unhappy, though. He'd been pressured into marrying Elizabeth and felt no real love for the woman he called his wife. His passion, his lust, was for Anne Boleyn alone. For years he pined for her. His heart leapt when she met his gaze, then sank when that gaze turned away from him toward the king. "Graven in diamonds with letters plain," he wrote, "there is written her fair neck round about. Noli me tangere. Do not touch me. Caesar's I am." So Thomas kept quiet. He stayed on as the king's advisor, never vocalized his love for Anne. And in 1527, when Henry had grown sick of waiting for a male heir, it was Thomas who was sent to Italy to meet with Pope Clement to request an annulment. But the meeting, it seems, was a failure. The Pope denied the annulment of the king's marriage to Catherine and sent Thomas back to England empty-handed. By the time the dust settled in the dramatic 5 years that followed, the Church of England had broken away from the Catholic Church. Henry had appointed himself the divine ruler, and Catherine of Aragon had been stripped of her crown, replaced by the much younger and much more beautiful Anne Boleyn. Thomas, of course, was despondent. For a decade, he had watched longingly, wishfully, as the love of his life fell further into the grasp of the king. He'd been hoping since 1527 that the king would grow bored with Anne, that after the annulment had been denied, he'd set his sights on someone new. But unfortunately, it just hadn't worked out that way. Now, Thomas Wyatt, the scholar, the poet, and the king's highest counselor, was secretly in love with England's new queen. He tried his best to guard her, to give her comfort in an unkind home. He faked his joy upon hearing the news that Anne had delivered the king's baby, and smiled comfortingly at the queen upon hearing that it had been a girl. His anxieties grew, as did Anne's, when the next baby arrived as a stillborn, and when Henry, still desperate for a male heir, began asking how he could leave Anne without having to return to his first wife. Thomas encouraged him to stay with her. It hurt to see her with him, but it would hurt more to have her dead. Anne tried again to have the king's baby, but by this point he'd already moved on. After 3 years of marriage, he'd lost interest and set his sights instead on a new mistress, Jane Seymour. A male heir was crucial to Anne's survival, and the stress just felt too much to bear. Upon walking into a room to speak with her husband and finding Jane Seymour sitting upon his lap, her rage was so uncontrollable that it pushed her over the edge. And 3.5 months into her pregnancy, she miscarried. A boy. The only thing that could have saved her. That was the beginning of the end for Anne Boleyn. In the months that followed, a narrative was constructed, whether by the king or by someone close to him, that Anne had been unfaithful, that she had taken 5 lovers, including her own brother, and Thomas Wyatt. But none of these claims was ever proven. In fact, they all seemed political. All 5 were men whom the king might want to get out of the way to advance his agenda. After torture, they confessed, with the hope that they might be spared, but the king wasn't feeling sympathetic. And from the window of his cell in the Tower of London, Thomas Wyatt watched as one by one they were executed. And then on May 19th, his world came crashing down. From that tower window, Thomas watched as the love of his life was walked across the scaffolding, as she gave her final speech, said her final prayers, as she dropped down onto her knees and the sword was raised. He closed his eyes as the blade cut through the air, and heard the thump of her head as it fell onto the scaffold. He was distraught, stricken with grief, and all he could think to do was write a poem. "O death, O death, rock me asleep. Bring me to quiet rest. Let pass my weary, guiltless ghost out of my careful breast. Toll on, thou passing bell." Thomas was led out of the Tower of London shortly afterward, and remained in the favor of the king. He took a new wife the following year, but never really got over the loss of Anne. He died only 5 years later, at the age of 39. But his legacy, I think, has outlived him in his poetry. Although he's not as notable as some of the other greats, it's because of Thomas Wyatt that those more notable names appear. You see, during that trip to Italy in 1527, he learned of a poetic style that had never been seen in England. And when he returned home that year, he brought with him the sonnet and introduced it to the English language. 25 years after Wyatt's death, a man named William Shakespeare was born, and he used that style to build a name for himself. And high school students have been cursing that name ever since. But Sir Thomas Wyatt holds a special place in my heart. Remember his first marriage to Elizabeth, and the son Thomas the Younger who was born? He went on to have a daughter named Anne, who had a son named Henry. And if you continue another 13 generations down that line, across an ocean into the American continent, you eventually reach the 20th century, when a child was born in Muncie, Indiana, who would go on to become the podcaster who's telling you this story today. I am as I am, and so will I be. But how that I am none knoweth truly. Be it evil, be it well, be I bond, be I free. I am as I am, and so will I be.